Oh, good morning, Redemption Church. Man, coming through that door, honestly, it feels like Seinfeld, like I should be Kramer, and I just... that was awesome coming out that side door. So welcome to our official second service. You guys are the first real official a second service that we've had in this building. And it's the first second service we've had since pre-COVID 2020. It's been a while, man, and now COVID's kicking up again. Is it because we started second service? I hope not. So anyway, it is good to be with all of you this morning, and here's the thing. Over the next few weeks, it's a little bit of a building shakedown. We're learning about the building more. We're figuring out what works, doesn't work. We're trying to manipulate some things as we're understanding just kind of the environment. So for example, some things that are interesting to note, we took these center rows here, and we kind of zigzagged them a little bit or jogged them a little bit so you can see a little better than you could last week, so that's an improvement. We also took out the back row of chairs so that people could walk in the back, but in this part of the building. That's kind of an improvement. Another thing we learned this morning, I came in at about 5 to do a little preliminary work before I went over to the gym, and I found out that our alarm system's so good, it won't let me in the building when I want to get into the building. So literally, we have like these little key cards, so I swipe it, nothing. I'm like, all right, I'm stuck, whatever. So I just went over to the gym, right? And so I told Pastor Scott, like, dude, I couldn't get in the building. So then he comes, because the alarm's set to go off at 7 a.m. and then come back on later. And he came, and it wouldn't let him in. He literally used a physical key, and it wouldn't let him in. Like, the computer just knows, man. And so I realized Skynet's a real thing. AI has taken over the building. And it's like, I don't want any humans till 7 o'clock. So apparently, we're going to have to learn that one, too. But now we're in it. We're in for our first regular second service, kind of a service that I really dig. And we are starting off a brand new series as a church. And so with that, I'm going to bring you in a little bit to the start of my talk today. And it's a bit of a pop quiz. I'm going to give you a list of names, and I want you to discern what is the common trait that all of these words have in common, right? What is the commonality behind all these names that I'm going to read to you? So we'll start off with some simple ones, such as Moses, or Confucius, or Socrates, or if you like Bill and Ted, Socrates. How about Plato, or Jesus, or Locke? Smith, Hamilton, Marx. How about Freud, or Nietzsche, or Hitler? How about Gandhi, or Mandela, or King? If we go into some of our pop culture, maybe Presley, or Carlin, or Swift, Poe, or Clancy, or Bernstein. Maybe in news, Carlson, or Maddow, or Shapiro. Or why not, for kicks and giggles, just say Trump or Harris? What do all of these names have in common? Anybody? They all wield the power of words to shape their world or their environment. And that's very much kind of the nature of the day, right? And kind of the series we're going into. For good, for bad, be it neutral, there is this inherent reality that the things that are spoken into this world have the capacity to radically shape, transform, whether for positive or for negative, the environment that we all live in. So in that sense, I want us to understand that words are incredibly powerful. And it doesn't matter if it comes from a poet or a pundit or a provocateur. It doesn't matter if it comes from philosophy, spirituality, science, you name it. There are just figures and things that are said that can change the entire environment that we all share and live in. So I want us to anchor in, and I'm going to say it many times today, that words just have inherent power. So much so that we actually have phrases to describe that. Such as the pen is mightier than the sword, right? Yeah, like we know that. Like, it's pretty wild to think that actually many people who wield the sword have been instructed by somebody who had the pen. And many people that wield weapons, the person that instructed them to do that is a person that does not even carry a weapon. They just tell other people to do it. So the words matter, right? The tongue is sharper than the blade. That's another one. The power of the press is mightier than any kind of tyranny that you can find. Like, all these ideas are in there. So for all of that, I want to be clear that words, in fact, really do matter. And we know it just looking at human history at that macro level. Here's what I'm also going to venture a guess at. Most of us, though, have not been impacted nearly as deep at the mic or at the macro level with those big words said in a culture. Well, we've probably been more impacted by the micro level, right? Where in our intimate relationships, our family, our friendships, our community, our acquaintances, our school, our work, or whatever, there have been words in those spaces. And those are the words that have really impacted us, right? Like maybe as a kid, you were picked on, or you were bullied, or you were mocked, or maybe you had a parent that was overbearing and always critical, and you just never felt like you could get ahead, or some person in your life that just said something that rattled you to the core and created insecurity, and it created a sense of just internal, like, weightedness. And from that, it's been hard to recover. Many of us have had things said to us in life where it's left a trauma or a scar or just something where we kind of live life with a limp. And if somebody says the wrong thing at the wrong time, it all comes right up to the surface. In fact, I would actually venture to guess that most who are paying the bills of a therapist are not doing it because of anything Trump or Harris said in the last week. But again, because of a friend, a parent, a child, a circumstance, a situation, a belittling, a mocking, or whatever. And that's the stuff that sticks, right? And so because of the power of words and because the Bible speaks so heavily to the words that we use, we're doing this 5-week series just kind of weighing the tone of our tongue and the talk that we speak. And today, the kind of the beginning theme is this idea of speaking truth and air to power. When we speak, we have the power of both. And so we want to be cautious with our words. We want to be thoughtful with our words, and we want to be kind of sensible. And before I get underway, I want to give you encouragement. If you're a reader and you want a book that's kind of easy to access and read, but really helpful and practical, this book right here is a great book. Let's bring that up. Words That Hurt, Words That Heal. This is actually not a Christian book. This is a Jewish rabbi that really put this together. But it just gets right to the core of some of these things and reminds us to lean into our better nature and better behavior when we're self-aware of the words that we use. And so, again, that's the heart behind this whole thing. This is just kind of supplementary. If you're somebody looking for a new book to read, this is a great one to read on this. But with that, I'm going to go ahead and remind you that we have an app. In the app, there are notes, and there are verses that we're looking at today all embedded into there, so you can just follow right along. But I'm also going to pray for us, because here's what I know, and you're going to hear bits of this today that come out from my own personal experience in life. And I know I have used words poorly, and I've had words poorly used against me, and all of that stings, right? And so if we're going to refine and grow and get better, we have to kind of probe a little bit. And so I know that can be tender. So I'm going to pray for that tenderness. I'm going to pray for that learning. I'm going to pray for the grace to absorb and the grace to go and do. And so right now, if you would pray with me, that would be fantastic. Jesus, I thank you. I thank you that there are times where you remind us of the stuff that we know. Like ever since we were little kids, we were reminded about what we say and what we shouldn't say and everything else. But it's so easy as we grow to forget. It's just so easy to be in the moment and in our emotions, and we say things we don't really want to say, don't mean to say, or we say for the wrong purpose or intention. There's so much growing we have to do. And so, Jesus, I ask that you would just teach us today, show us and guide us in your will and in your word and what you want for our lives. And so we really look to you, we seek you, and we desire you to speak into us. And so we thank you for the grace and generosity you show us, the kindness that is always dispensed upon us, and we pray that we would emulate that in like kind. And so, Jesus, we praise you this day for all your goodness in your perfect name. Amen. All right, so words are the most powerful thing in life and the universe. I'm going to double down on that. Words are the most powerful. In fact, if anything, I would liken words to being like nuclear fission, all right? Nuclear fission is an incredible tool that we have harnessed, and you can leverage it for incredible good. We can actually build a nuclear reactor that will power life for millions. It will harness flourishing in incredible ways. But that same fission can be also unlocked as a nuclear weapon that can, in an instant, extinguish the lives of millions without a thought. right? It can go both ways. And it is the same when it comes to the power of words. You can decimate a life or you can inspire a life. You can suppress a life or you can unleash a life just with the words that are spoken. And I believe this power of words isn't just that we humans have it, but rather because it really hails from God who leverages it, and then he's graced us with the capacity for it. And so therefore, if we're going to learn the power of words and what they do, I think it's important to go back to the genesis of words themselves. And when you do that, it actually goes all the way back to the book of Genesis. The very first book of the Bible, the very first page of the Bible, emphasizes the power of words that are spoken. Now, in the Hebrew scriptures, which is that big chunk of the Old Testament, the Hebrew word is devarim. That's the word for words. And that Hebrew word can mean things or it can mean stuff, as well as it can mean words. It has all this kind of bandwidth. And so when you're reading through Genesis chapter 1, you see that it repeatedly says a phrase, "Then God said." It says it 10 times, not just once or five or seven, 10 times. "Then God said, let there be light. Then God said, let them separate the land from the sea. Then God said," there's all these things, right? And what you see is that God is leveraging the power of words to take chaos and produce order. So it's already anchoring right from the get-go that words have incredible power, creative power. You can take that which is falling apart and bring order to that. That's an incredible power. Then you get to the Christian Testament, the New Testament, and you go to the very first chapter of the Gospel of John, and it describes Jesus as what? The Word. Literally, the logos or logos, depending on who you listen to. And again, it's just emphasizing that there is something about the inherent nature of God that when God speaks, things happen. And because of that, that has inherent power in it. And so I want us to really begin to grapple with the idea then that words aren't just things that we throw around between human beings, but they are built in this ontological space. That's a fancy word for saying the essence of their being is found in God. And then therefore, everything we sort of dwell within is connected to these ideas of words. Like the fabric of the cosmos, if you looked at kind of the cipher of quantum mechanics, you boil all of energy, all of matter down to a singular spot, and it's literally just code. Code that makes up and holds the entire universe together. Those are the very words of God. Colossians talks about this. Or you look at the biosphere of our planet. All biological life, you, me, trees, plants, fish, bugs, you name it, anything that is organic is built on this idea of DNA, the language of God. It's just code, it's letters, it's the words of God created in a material way. And so with that, I think it's important to understand that if God uses words and words are powerful, what God then did when he created us is he created us with the capacity for words, and that's powerful because we're made in the image of God. And so there's a connection in all of this. In fact, we see in Genesis chapter 1, verse 26, it says, "Then God said, let us make human beings in our image to be like us." Now, this is just a fun fact because you're here this morning, but when you look at the Hebrew idea of worship, and you look at the Christian idea of worship, the Bible makes the same kind of demand that we don't have any, quote, graven images, which means we're not to shape or carve or craft anything that becomes an icon of God. So nothing can be fashioned that is iconic of our God and Father, right? And so you go, okay, there's no icons then in the world of God, but that's not true, and that's not what Genesis 1 says. God is allowed to make icons. God's allowed to have an image made of himself, and what he chose to do and fashioned of his own hand was humanity. That's why we are literally the image of God. We're the icon of God. God made us in his image. I don't know what that fully means, but there's a purpose behind it. There's an intention behind it, and with that, what it means is he has granted us certain power and certain authority that is sort of mimicking his own power and authority, and of that, the most unique foundation of that is we can speak, and our words can do things. Our words can create a world that is beautiful. Our words can create a world that is ugly. But we have that capacity because we bear his image. And that's what you see as you go from Genesis 1 to Genesis 2. So in Genesis 1, God speaks. But then you get to Genesis 2, and now it's God and Adam speaking. and God's giving decrees. But then from that, you see Adam begins to create, right? So there's all these animals, and Adam creates a catalog of their names, right? So that's kind of his words creating more order to the world. And then God makes Eve for Adam, and Adam creates more words, right? And he's celebrating, and he's praising, and he's excited for the continuity of a relationship that is just fitted to himself. And so words are beautiful for Genesis 1 and Genesis 2. But then we get to Genesis chapter 3. And in Genesis 3, the words of celebration and creating and kind of this idea of praising become words of advocating and cursing and abdicating responsibility and blaming, right? Just breaks down. It's a display of deception, temptation, deflection. And so where Genesis 1 and 2 was all about words create order, from Genesis 3 all the way to right now in this room in Duval, chaos because of words has had its way. Or if anything, it's kind of like a dual threat, right? Our words can bring like beautiful perfume to our environment, but it's also like toxic gas depending on what we do, what we say, to who we say it to, when we say it, all those kinds of things. And so the thing that ruined the world in Genesis 3 wasn't war, it wasn't murder, it wasn't assault. That doesn't happen until Genesis 4. No, the thing that ruined the world, brought death and decay, was just simply words. Right? Words that were lies, words that were temptations, words that were blaming, words. And so since Genesis 3, we're all up against this thing. And so when you get into the New Testament, there's a dude named James. And James is the little brother of Jesus. Jesus had a handful of half-brothers and sisters. James is one of them. And James learned from his brother a lot. Matter of fact, if anything, if you read the book of James, it's really commentary on the messages of his brother Jesus. He's just like, I'm going to break it down for you, how we can learn from what my brother said. And when he speaks of words, he gets really particular. And so with that, it's the first point in your notes. And it has to do with the world-shaping power of such a teeny tool. The world-shaping power of the tongue. It's so weird that what we say shapes the environment that we live in. Now, when I was a kid, I was taught that the tongue is the strongest muscle of the body. How many heard that? I went to a bad school. You too? All right, me? We won't. Not true, though. The tongue is not the strongest muscle in the body. You know, the strongest muscle in the body is just to the left and just to the right of the tongue. It's this jaw muscle right here. We should use it more by just closing it shut, right? But the tongue, ready? It has the most stamina next to the heart, right? It can go and go and go and go, 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 and it can keep going, and it almost never gets tired, man. It's an incredible thing. And in that, man, the tongue has radical diversity. It's like a portable moistener. Oh, all right, it does that. That's kind of cool. And it can also shove food to the back of your mouth. That's cool. It can clean your teeth if you do it right. That's cool. It can show how you're feeling inside. Like, pfft, that's cool. It can do all kinds of cool stuff, right? But the thing we know most is the tongue. Man, it wields words. It can create the stuff of kingdoms, and it can also create the stuff of nightmares, right? That's its versatility. It can inspire. It can ennoble. It can empower, it can educate, it can liberate, it can heal people. And at the same time, it can criticize, divide, manipulate, suppress, implicate, and it can harm. And so James says it this way. He says, indeed, we all make many mistakes, but if we could control our tongues, we would be perfect and could also control ourselves in every other way. Here's what I love about James. He's just putting us on notice in that as much as all of our poo actually smells, all of our words and breath actually stinks sometimes. Like nobody's immune from this. Nobody can escape this. Nobody can say, I've never said anything mean, bad, demeaning, cruel, harsh, short. Nobody can. We probably couldn't say that honestly looking at the last month of our life. Because he's like, if you could control that, you could control everything else, right? But we can't. We know it. We're guilty of this thing. And so he's just really just letting us know up front, like, hey, this is a problem for everybody. So if we're sitting there right now going, I know somebody that should be listening to this, he's like, and that person's you, right? That's what he's getting at. And like his big brother, he does a great job of then building on this word picture, and he stacks illustrations. He says, just as a small bit directs a powerful animal and a small rudder controls a large vessel and a small ember ignites a vast inferno, So too the tongue is a small thing, but it can make grand speeches. It can say a lot of stuff. Thus he says in verse 6, among all the parts of the body, the tongue is a flame of fire. It is a whole world of wickedness corrupting your entire body. And thus he says this, it can set your whole world and whole life on fire. For it's set on fire by hell itself. It is a relentless or restless and evil, full of deadly poison. There's a lot going on there, but I want to highlight that one section that's in bold, right? It can set your whole life on fire. I read that this week, and the first thing I did is I thought, all right, Matt, what have been times or circumstances or people, right, or situations or moments of impatience or frustration or whatever, where then you said a thing, and when you said that thing, it set your little world on fire? And I could think of many. Right? It's true. I'm just letting you know, man, I do things and say things and verbalize things that as soon as it happens is like an ember in a dry field. It's just, we're off to the races, man. But the other thing I thought about is the fact that, you know what, there are also realities where our inner psyche is set on fire because somebody said something, right? And it lit us up inside. Either with insecurity or with hurt or with anger or whatever it is. Like, there's been those things, right? Again, a bitey comment, a parent that was overbearing, something that was said harshly or impatiently or in frustration or whatever else, right? Maybe a teacher, a manager, you name it, a pastor who said something or did something, and man, it just laid you flat. And it's created a trauma inside. It's created a hurt inside, and that hurt doesn't ever quite heal. See, that's the stuff that lights up people's lives in a bad way. And I was thinking about this. This is, again, like a personal part of this for me. But I have a younger brother. I have three younger brothers, but one that's a full brother, two that are half brothers. And my most immediate younger brother, we didn't like grow up in the most healthy environment, not the most encouraging environment, not the most inspiring environment. You know, there's a lot of frustration. There was a lot of violence and anger and all those kinds of things are in there. And I got a little misty in the last service. I think I'll do better today. But my brother, he was the sweeter of the two of us. He was just the sweeter kid, 3 years younger, kind, sweet, big heart, everything else. But my brother was also 85% deaf. And this was like in the 70s and 80s where, you know, we didn't have the sensitivities that we do now, right? And so my brother was picked on mercilessly, you know, mercilessly as a kid. And it really did a lot of damage to him. And then that was on top of when he'd get home, he would get picked on parentally even more. I mean, it was really a strange thing. And I remember one time we were in school, and my brother was walking, and I was walking with him, and he was walking with his wrist like this. And some kid called him kind of a gay smear word, and it stuck. My brother's not gay. But for the next few years, that was always kind of the rumor, right? And that kind of wrote on him more. And after the course of time, it's just dog pile atop a dog pile and mockery and belittlement and just having no sense of personal worth or security or whatever else. And now my brother's like 50, and he's just not that sweet kid, right? It took all those words just pecking away, destroying this really sweet kid, right? So then I look at that and I go, man, words have power. Words have power. I'm going to share a story about my own life here in a few weeks about how my words had power in the life of a person. And again, I'm doing that because I want to put us all on notice to not take it casually, right? That what we say and what we do can leave an impact. Now, what I think is even more important to drive home, and I think what is weirdly kind of bizarre, is that sometimes it is the people that we love the most that we use the worst words with. That's odd, isn't it? Right? Like our families, our kids, our spouse, our family members. our close friends, whatever it is. It's like really strange how that's where we let our guard down. Like out in the community, we can be friendly, and then at home, we can be sharp, we can be frustrated, we can be angry, whatever it is. And there's all sorts of different ways that the words come out. It isn't always bitterness. It isn't always just like fury or whatever else. I think there's other words that we use that do damage, right? For example, I'm going to say a word that right now you're going to be like, oh, why did he use that word? Sarcasm. Sarcasm, oh man, you're like, oh, but I love sarcasm. Me too. I'm so good at it. And I know that it does damage. My wife, who loves me and speaks words of kind of life into my life, will say, you know, Matt, when you're sarcastic, there's a little bit of truth in everything you say. I'm like, no, there's not. Yes, there is. All right, so there kind of is. So sarcasm is one of those things. Or being flippant, all right, just being flippant in some way. Or critical or needling, right? Those will get you. I remember as a kid, I would get kind of teased at the dinner table. It's like, oh, Matt likes a girl. He's got a girlfriend. You know, there would be like this thing, right? And then after a while, I'm like, I share nothing with my family at the dinner table because I'm just going to get teased and mocked. Or we have words of always and never, so we have extreme words. There's all sorts of words that get used. So don't just put this in the category of like hostile, angry, bitey words. There's all sorts of words that I think do damage in the soul of people. And when that happens, not only does it hurt them, but it actually kind of hurts us in the process as well. And so it sets the world kind of on fire at any given time in our own little micronucleus. In fact, I think this is why James describes the capacity for words as a relentless evil in verse 8. A relentless evil. That word relentless elsewhere is rendered unstable in the Greek. Unstable. And I think about that. Like, poorly chosen words, it can destabilize your life. And poorly chosen words can dehumanize other people in the process. And poorly chosen words, if anything, they can destroy healthy climates because we're just wielding them in kind of a reckless way, right? Now, in this, there's an even more concerning thing, especially for the theist, and that is that when we use words that are unhealthy, unwholesome, unhelpful, it doesn't just assault the person, and buckle up for this, it actually assaults God. And I didn't say it, James says it. As he closes his argument, he says, sometimes it, that is the tongue, praises our Lord and Father, and sometimes it curses those who have been made in the image of God. Remember what I said? There's only one iconic emblem of God in the world, and that is human beings that he made in his image, and he crafted them to bear his image in the world. And so what James is saying, hey, if you bless God, and then you turn around and you curse the image of God in a person, you've got a problem, right? He says, so it's crazy, the blessing and cursing come pouring out of the same mouth. He says, surely this is not right. And that one really hits home to me, right? Because it's easy to be like, God's up there, and then you're right here, and I'm not saying this to him, I'm just saying it to you. And God's like, but here's the thing. My image is in them, and when you're after them, you're after me, whether you acknowledge that or not. In fact, even in 1 John chapter 4, he has this crazy thing about, if you say you love God whom you can't see, but then you don't love the people you can see, he's like, let's be honest, you really just don't love God, because God's been pretty clear. I want you to love me and love your neighbor, and by loving your neighbor, it shows you really love me, especially the neighbor that's hard to love. When you love them, it shows you really love me. It's a cycle, a circle. And I love it because it puts me on notice that then the control of my words is not simply because I'm trying to be a good person and a nice human, but I want to control my words because every person is the image bearer of God. And to say it to them is to say it to him. To treat them in a certain way is to treat him in a certain way. For me, that is incredibly sobering. Now, it's crazy. I've actually had people in my world that have told me, well, not everybody's an image bearer. I'm like, no, that's not how this works. We can't decide, well, I don't like them, so they're not an image bearer. I literally was told that recently by somebody, like, they're not image bearers. I'm like, no, everybody is. And we have to see it that way. It's not always easy, it's not always fun, but it is always important. It's important. And to not do it, well, then it's surely not right. Now, here's the thing, to be fair, about taming the tongue. It's hard, bro. Like, I don't want to sugarcoat it at all. It's literally hard. Take it from me, it is hard. I am a verbal processor. Stupid falls out of my mouth every 7 to 10 minutes. Like, I'm just good at that because I'm just out loud. I'm processing, thinking, stupid. Just plops out of my mouth, right? Like, I get it. It's going to be rough, right? But nonetheless, I have to just realize, like, that means I may have to double down on being extra cautious with what I say. I think more than that, I also have to own where my words are really coming from, right? Right? Where the real housing component of what I say, where it's located. Because here's the thing. Like in school, we were taught, hey, here's how you form words. Your diaphragm presses on your lungs. Your lungs press air over your larynx, over the tongue, through the mouth, between the teeth and the lips. And from that, you have words, right? But when I read the Bible, I actually find out that there is a location of words that begins before the mechanism of speech ever occurs. And that's the second thing in your notes. Words don't form from our tongues, but they come from our heart. Right? And I put heart in quotes because I don't just mean like this organ that's pumping in your chest. I mean that inner you, that space that's your inner person. And Jesus is the one that speaks to this. So the author of words, right? He sticks the landing with this discussion with religious leaders that are using words in destructive ways. And he says this to them. A tree is identified by its fruit. If a tree is good, the fruit will be good. And if a tree is bad, its fruit will be bad. And then he says, you brood of snakes, which is, you know, kind of a good cut down right there. But he's trying to get their attention. He says, how can you evil men speak things that are good and right? Like, there's something in you that's corrupt, so what's coming out is going to be corrupt. You think you're right, but you're wrong in what you're saying. And then he says this, for whatever is in your heart determines what you say. So let me try to illustrate this. What comes out here has its birthplace, what is in here and what is in your intuition here. You could even say in your cognitive mind and in your emotional makeup, right? That's where it kind of has its home. But then here's the crazier part. Where that is informed is based on what comes through here and here. In other words, what comes out is predicated on what comes in. What we ingest, what we consume shapes all of that, and it's shaping it in such a way that we're almost not going to be able to help but then come out with certain things that are either positive or negative, good or bad, somewhere in between, right? That's going to be the fundamental problem. And sometimes what we say is going to be really, really wholesome. Other times what we say is going to be really, really destructive. Sometimes it's going to be even neutral, which is a problem we'll see later in this series. But what we know is that every one of us has been written on. We've all been students our whole life of different things, right? Like there's things that I hear come out of my mouth and I go, that's my dad. There's things that come out of my mouth and I go, that's my favorite comedian. There's things that come out of my mouth and I go, oh, that's a political person that I favor, right? We're all students. We're all sucking it in. None of us are quite original in all of our thoughts, right? Everything is kind of an amalgamation of different things that we've ingested over the course of time. That's what's key here. And so with that, when we think about our words, here's the good news. I have the key to success. I know exactly what it takes to get our words right, right? And it's the third thing in your notes. The secret to healthy words is diet and exercise. That's right. It comes from the pastor that's also the personal trainer at the gym. Of course, he rolls in with diet and exercise, but it applies. It's all the same, right? And for us, what's diet then? If we're talking about an internal, intellectual, spiritual makeup, what is our diet? Again, it's the stuff we take in verbally or from an auditory perspective, right? It's the ingesting of stuff and information. And so what we need to start doing in our lives, if we want to really have awesome words with the people that are around, we want to start analyzing, hey, who am I a student of? Who am I taking in? Who am I sitting under in all sorts of different ways? Am I listening to people that love to be peacemakers, or am I listening to people that love to be provocateurs? Am I listening to people that really emphasize and push like hope and faith and grace, or is it fear and doom and gloom? Because that's going to drive my words. If I listen to people that are constantly talking hate, I'm probably going to struggle with hate. If I'm talking and listening to people that are talking about how we love one another, even the people that hate us, I'm probably going to lean that direction, right? If I'm around people or I'm hearing voices or reading things that are talking about the beauty of forgiveness, I'm going to be better at that. But if it's about resentment, I'm going to be better at that. Belittling voices are one thing, inspiring voices are another thing. It's all the same, right? And all the ways we ingest are all the stuff we're around, man, right? Like, your phone is the ultimate, like, diet source for good or bad, empty calories, full calories. It's pumping stuff at us all the time, right? Books, blogs, movies, music, right? The teaching voices of our world, whatever they are, all of that stuff is laying a framework in us that gives us our words and our worldview, and that is what we speak from. I love what Solomon says when he talks about our spiritual and psychological diet. He says in Proverbs 4, "Keep your heart with all vigilance, for from it flows the springs of life." Like, remember that song, "Be careful, little eyes, what you see," right? That's kind of what he's saying. Be careful, little ears, what you hear. That's it. Guard what you take in. I love what the Good News Translation says. Be careful how you think. Your life is shaped by your thoughts. That's it. That's it. Whoever's informing you, whoever you're around, whatever you're taking in, whoever you elevate, that's the stuff that's going to slip out and slide out. So you have to ask that question, who is my intellectual nutrition source or sources? So diet matters. But then you have proper intake, so you have proper outtake, you work these things out. And so in this sense, Jesus talks about implementation. In fact, there's a scene where Jesus has just done a miracle, and a woman in the crowd hollers, she says, "Blessed is the woman that nursed you." And Jesus is like, "Yeah, my mom's rad, but," he says this, "but even more blessed are those who hear the word of God and put it into practice." Practice is a great word. Oxford says practice is the actual implementation of a belief that is different than just the theory of. Right? It's so easy to, I love the Bible, I trust the Bible, I believe the Bible. The Bible's God's word, and then we read it about what it says about how we use our words, and it's like, that's a great theory. And the Bible's like, no, I want you to practice it. Jesus is like, I want you to do it. That's what practice is. Practice is the habitual procedure for doing something, the repeated exercise of an activity to acquire or maintain proficiency. So what that means for us today is we go, okay, I got to watch my diet, but I also have to start doing a thing. And so I'm going to give you a handful of things, rapid fire, that we can do, right, to start working on the language side, the word side of our life. First of all, it's about exercising the practice of speaking intentionally. For Jesus says, for every one of us must give an account on judgment day for every idle word. I got a lot of idle words, man. My world is filled with idle words, and now I got to give an account for that. We're going to get into that more in the coming weeks. But yes, man, that's enough for me to go, I need to use those side muscles to shut up more. Because lots of accounting. It's eternity. I'm going to take up millions of years just of accounting for my idle words, maybe. I don't know, but I go, that means it's serious. And so I need to speak intentionally. Next, I need to make sure I'm practicing the idea of speaking constructively. It says, for everything you say is to be good and helpful, that your words will be an encouragement to those who hear them. That one I've really had to focus on more, right? Like, I want to ask myself, is what I'm about to say good? Is it going to be helpful? Will it encourage? Even if there's a problem, I want to say something that's going to be good and helpful and encouraging. That's the space I need to be in. That leads into the next thing, practicing this idea of speaking restoratively. What's Proverbs say? Love prospers when a fault is forgiven, but dwelling on it separates close friends. Like, sometimes I can be eager to talk, not because I want to instigate healing, but because I want to initiate a little bit more conflict, right? To get my point of view across or to get my way or whatever it is. Like, that's the risk always. But then here I want to remember, like, oh, wait a minute. My goal is restoration, not retribution. I want to fix, not break. I want to heal, not hurt. Fourth, we're to be exercising the practice of speaking generously, because a gentle answer deflects anger, but a harsh word makes tempers flare. See, this is hard because sometimes I know with me, I don't want to make things right. I just want them to see that I am right. Ever been there? Like, I'm not really trying to fix it. I'm just trying to win, right? But I go, but that usually just blows up in my face and lights the world on fire, and it's not a great blessing. Next, maybe what this really comes down to is speaking cautiously. James says we are to be quick to listen and slow to speak and slow to get angry. Sometimes we listen, and we listen so we can get ammunition, so we can fire back at the speaker, and that's not the right thing. We're supposed to listen and not get quickly agitated, but rather try to figure out what's the way to work us together, right? And even there, it doesn't say you can never be angry, but what Paul tells us is you have to stop by sundown, right? So even more, like, all right, it's a 12-hour window I got, right? And then I got to stop. So it kind of reminds us of our goals. Speak cautiously. And then last, this is about exercising the practice of speaking lovingly. Because Jesus was clear when he wraps up the Sermon on the Mount. He says, do to others whatever you would like them to do to you. This is the essence of all that is taught in the law and the prophets. All right, and so if somebody's going to confront me or correct me or just communicate with me, there's a certain way I hope they come and do that. And it's just like, okay, whatever way I hope they would do it with me, I want to do it with them. That's the essence of everything that Jesus is getting at when it comes to the Sermon on the Mount and the full Hebrew scriptures. Like, that's a really helpful thing. Now, I know some people will say, well, I like it straight. Like, when you get it straight from somebody you don't like it straight, right? We all know there is a good way and a bad way in which to communicate. And so this is just a reminder to all of us, right? To be aware of our words. And here's the thing about this, man. It takes daily commitment. It takes actual work. It takes self-awareness. It takes reminder. And so I'm going to close with letting you in on a little something that you may not know. For those who know me, at least, yellow, not my favorite color. I know. People don't believe it. They think it's a lie. It's like, see, he's already using lying words. He's actually violating his very talk today. No, here's the thing. I do like yellow quite a bit, but that's not why I wear it. That's not why I have it, because if you don't know me, I literally wear yellow Crocs in town. I have yellow gym shoes at the gym. I have a yellow Jeep. I have a yellow cup. I have a yellow thermos. I have lots of yellow, man. I have a yellow wristband on my wrist. But here's the secret. About 7-8 years ago, my wife is like, you know what? You're kind of melancholy. You're always seeing the bad, not the good. You always have a complaint, not a solution. You always are kind of a pessimist, not an optimist. And I go, I'm just a realist. But, you know, like, although that was there, and I knew my words were not great, especially around my home. I'm not a yeller. I'm not a ranter. I'm not aggressive that way, but I was always just kind of Eeyore, right? And so I'm like, I need to go to war with my words. And I'm like, yellow reminds me to be happy. Yellow puts me on notice that I need to carry myself differently. So this band and my shoes and everything else, it's a perpetual reminder of what I'm aspiring to be in my disposition, in my words, in my community, and in my home. That's it. Matter of fact, this wristband has the Boswell motto. It's a Scottish motto, which is very foy, means pure faith. And that's my objective. And so I'm wearing yellow every day as a screaming reminder, Matt, be that guy that you want to be. Use your words in the way you want to use them. Make sure you're bringing this positivity to the community that you live in. And here's the great thing about it. It really has been working, right? You talk to people at the gym, you mean the happy guy in the yellow shoes, right? Like, it works. I go to Safeway, you know, and they're like at the pharmacy, they're like, man, every time you come in, you make our day. You're like the happiest guy. You're always so jovial. I drive a yellow Jeep, which means I'm happy. I can't flip you off when you did something stupid. Everybody's going to know the guy in the yellow Jeep that's typically happy was just a jerk, right? So puts me on notice. But here's the sad part. And then I get home and I'm so worn out from being so nice to everybody. Then it's like, oh, now I can just be my grouchy me again, right? Remember that whole thing about the people we love the most seem to get the worst sometimes, right? And so it was funny, I was telling the story, because last Sunday, just another peek into my life, last Sunday was awesome. We were just going hard and fast all week, and we had the three services, and then I went home, and I was so worn and kind of discouraged and just wiped out, like my body just shut down, right? And my whole family's over there and like, wasn't that great today, Dad? And after 10 years of this and 13 years of that, and I'm like, yeah, right, shut up. I'm watching the Seahawks. I was just like that, you know? And then I told the story about the pharmacy this week, and how I'm just so happy. And my oldest daughter goes, well, I want that, Dad. And she was spot on, man. Spot on. And so it's going to be work. I have to be more aware. But the people I love the most should get the best, if anything. All right? And so we're all in process. So I have a reminder constantly, all the time, yellow everywhere. Right? And so here's my question for you. A, what area of your words do you know you need to work on? That's your first question. What's the thing you know? I need to work on that. And then with that, what is going to be the mechanism, the thing, the reminder you have to put you on notice every day that says, oh yeah, very foy, yellow, right? Pure faith. I'm going to be choosing joy. I'm not going to choose my pessimism. I'm not going to say the negative. I'm trying to say the positive. I want to get better and refine. What's your thing going to be? So right now, I want to go ahead and ask you to pray with me. And as I do, it's also our communion Sunday, which I love because, again, if I look at Jesus and I go, man, here is one who brought words of life in a world of death. And when we cheered for his crucifixion, he prayed for our forgiveness. Like, that dude knew the words right, right? And so as we get ready for communion, I want you to remember that. We're going to pass the elements out after I pray here, and you just hold them. We'll take them together in a minute. But I'm going to pray for us. Jesus, man, we're looking to you to help us. I'm looking to you to help me because, again, I know, I can have good words and bad words. I can have positive and negative. I can have inspiring and discouraging. I can be a man of faith or I can be a man of doubt. And I pray that I would not sin against you or against others with my words, but rather I would honor you by honoring others with my words. Help me to grow in that. Help us all to grow in how we use our words. Not fake or artificial, but authentic and real. Coming from a heart that is a good tree bearing good fruit to make the world a good place, because that is what you are rescuing and redeeming. You are rescuing all things. You are redeeming your creation to yourself. And we know that we are a part of that. And just as much as you've got the power of words, you've given us the power of words, may we use them well. May we remember what you've done for us also in your life and death and resurrection. As we remember your table of union, I pray that we are humbled by it and inspired as well. We love you, Jesus, and we thank you in your good name. Amen. As they pass the